What's going on, everybody? This is Robert English, your SoCal Seahawk, and thank you for joining me on episode 3 of Short Yardage. And if you weren't aware, there was a very offensive football game played on Sunday between the Seattle Seahawks and the Detroit Lions. Offensive. Either way you look at it, you'd be accurate. It could certainly be considered to be offensive if you talk about the defense, but it was definitely offensive, as that was really all we saw in this game was offense. What more can be said about this game that hasn't been said about just the worst defensive teams ever historically in football? I mean, as great as it was to see so many points put up, the defenses might as well have just not even been on the field. A complete shootout. We came out on top, so that's always great. I didn't expect this game to go that way. And once I saw that that it was going the way of a shootout, I frankly didn't expect us to come out on top. Geno Smith, another great game. He is exceeding expectations no matter how you slice it. The guy is going out there. He's making smart decisions with the football. His pocket presence on Sunday was much better this week. He's not throwing the ball to the other team. He's putting the ball in places. I mean, he's out there looking like a great quarterback. The first touchdown pass he threw, I believe it was to Disley, perfect position on the throw, over the shoulder of the defender with his back turned. Only person who could make that catch was Will Disley, and he did. It was a masterful performance by Geno. What did he finish? I think Geno finished 23 for 30 for 320 yards and 2 touches. A long of a 54, 132.6 quarterback rating. I mean, that's huge. I mean, he's literally the best quarterback in football right now, you know, per the stats. Now, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves with, crowning him just yet, you know, but per the stats, he's performing better than basically every quarterback in the league. So hats off to Geno Smith on that. Big hats off to Rashad Penny. Finally, we're seeing over the course of multiple games the effect that Penny has on a football game when he's healthy. You know, y'all always say that the best ability is availability. And that has been one ability that Rashad Penny has not had since he was drafted. And here he is now continuing, picking up on, you know, where he left off last year, in the last season. He's almost running roughshod over defenses right now. And you can't give him much praise without giving the offensive line praise. Offensive line that's got rookies on both sides, and they're keeping Geno clean and opening holes for Rashad Penny. Rashad Penny 17 carries for 151 yards. That's a huge rushing day. If we can run the football like that, I mean, not even that much, right? Forget the 150. If we can run the ball 17 times in a game, Okay, if one running back can get 17 carries, okay, Kenneth Walker had 8 carries for 30 yards himself, 29 yards, right? But that's 25 carries. When we get to run the ball 25 times in a game, we're probably at least getting close to winning that game. Pete Carroll talks about it all the time. We're not getting the opportunities to run the football. And when we don't have the opportunities to run the football, we're not having opportunities to do a lot of other things that we want to do on offense. So we ran the ball just between Rashad Penny and Kenny Walker. You know, again, 25 carries for you know, just under 200 yards. That's a great day. When those numbers show up, you're going to see a good offensive performance by the Seattle Seahawks. So big up there. Big ups to the running game, to Rashad Penny, and to the offensive line. There was some mistakes. I believe Cross got called. I don't know if it was a hold. I think it was a hold. He got called for something. We're going to have those with these young guys on the offensive line, but I mean, you'll take it when you can put up, you know, 48 points, right? Now, we have to talk about the defense. The defense is still terrible. It's only fortunate that we were going against another defense that was very terrible, but the Seattle Seahawks defense gave up 520 yards. And that's, I mean, plain and simple, not good, not good. We are still not far off track for giving up, you know, a historical amount of yards on defense. Like we were, year before last, you know, where we managed to win a few games, but we're just giving up crazy number of yards on defense. We're doing it again. Over 500 total yards for Detroit. This game really was fairly even in most statistical categories. Total yards, 555 versus 520. Both sides gave up a fumble. We did end up plus one on the turnover ratio. Penalties, again, double-digit penalties. Seattle 11 for 76, Detroit 8 for 59. We did pretty good on third down. 9 for 12 for Seattle, and we held Detroit to 4 for 10, which is really unfortunate because if you hold a team 4 out of 10 on third down, you expect to have you should have a double-digit lead on a team that you, if you hold them, you know, 4 out of 10, 40% on third down. Over the course of a game, you should beat that team by two scores. But we just gave up so many chunk plays in this game. The defense, you know, every good play on defense was matched by a bad one. We gave up a second and 23. Now, I'm really big when your defense is given is afforded the opportunity to play against a third and long. You have to win that down. You have to win third and long, right? And when you don't win on third and long, I'm of the opinion that you just like that's a result. That's a play result that tells me that you don't really deserve to win, right? You don't deserve to win a game when you're giving up third and long. I'm talking like long, like not long like third and 10, because, you know, 20 years ago third and 10 was third and long. Nowadays 10 yards isn't really so much. But third and 15, third and 20, third and 28, right? That's long. Well, we gave up a second and 23. Like on that drive, when on that down, I'm thinking, okay, second and 23, all you got to do is just, you know, not give up anything, not let anybody get behind you. Let them get there probably between 5 and 9, 10 yards, and then we'll have them on a third and, you know, reasonably long. You know, an opportunity to make a play, and we gave that up. And it's just unbelievable. There was one, oh my God, and Cody Barton where is Cody Barton? Now, I've allowed myself to believe when I hear Pete Carroll talk about Cody Barton that this guy is he's this and he's that. He's got the ability to make great plays out there, and so on and so forth. I hear good things about Cody Barton, but I'm seeing a lot of bad things from Cody Barton. Cody Barton missing tackles. Cody Barton taking bad angles, missing assignments. There was one play. So first of all, the tight end is killing us this season. Tight ends are working us, working the defense. And TJ Hockenson destroyed us. Right, they targeted him 12 times. Had 8 catches for 179 yards. Destroyed us. He killed us worse than Cordarrelle Patterson did last week against Atlanta. Destroyed us. Now I can deal with a player getting open, especially if the quarterback has time in the pocket, which I almost said Matt Stafford, Jared Goff did. We got to him one time, one sack, so he had time to throw the football. We got to work on the pass rush, but anyways, I can deal with a player getting open. But on one play, I think it might have been third quarter. It was his second big play of the game. Not the one that he scored on, but the second one where he just had a big play. He's running down the sideline, and Cody Barton is running full speed into the guy. And I know TJ Hockenson is no small dude. I get that. But when your middle linebacker has the angle on a player who's all but tiptoeing down the sideline, throws his body into him and gets no movement. I mean, either Cody Barton is tragically undersized compared to TJ Hockenson, or the guy went into it without his britches on, without his big boy britches on. He threw his body into TJ Hockenson, and Hockenson just bounced off of him. And then he got back up and chased him again, and it was one of those situations where you're like, okay, I knew I couldn't get this guy down the first time, so I'm gonna chase him down, but I'm not really gonna try and tackle him. He just kind of hovered around him as he got all the way down to the 2-yard line, I think, and after another player already got him wrapped up, he grabbed him around his ankles and came with the assist. Cody Barton is getting an F on the season for me so far, and I don't know what's going on there. I don't know what is going on there. The defense as a whole is getting, I mean, obviously, is getting an F. We cannot stop a nosebleed. And it's, again, not a sustainable. I've said this after the Denver game. This is not a sustainable model. You can't win football games if you're consistently giving up first downs, touchdowns, trips to the red zone, everything in that realm. You got to make some stops. Lockett and Metcalf had great days. Metcalf 7 for 149. Lockett was 6 for 91. Lockett did have the fumble on the punt return, which was uncharacteristic. The crazy thing about this game is that it looked like we were about to run away with it. It looked like we were getting ready to run away with this game after the fumble. Kobe Bryant, who made a great play. Like I said, these guys, you make a great play, then you have a big faux pas, right? Kobe Bryant forces a fumble. Can't remember who jumped on top of it, but we get the turnover after we score. And we go down and score again. I'm thinking, we're going to run away with this thing. And then we give up. I think that was right after that. On that next drive, we gave up the run, the big run to Jamal Williams, if I'm not mistaken. Where was I going with that?
The game looked like we might run away with this, especially after we get the pick six. From Tariq Woolen, that was That was huge. I'm thinking, okay, we know we're not stopping this team, but if you can be opportunistic, if you get a pick six in the game, like, you know, you that usually takes the wind out of the sails of the other team. You know, you're going to be looking good. All kinds of opportunities for us to just run away with this game, and you know, just couldn't do it. Just couldn't do it. You know, up, 24 to, what was the score at the half? 24 to 15. I mean, and then, you know, we scored 14 in the third quarter. I mean, we had every opportunity to really run away with this game. And then the fourth quarter, they put up 22 points. And we end up having to win by recovering an onside kick, which we almost didn't recover. We almost didn't get the onside kick. If Detroit recovers that onside kick, we probably lose the game. You know, this is another one of those situations. It's like if the Denver kicker had just kept that ball a foot and a half further inside, we lose that game. Right? So we really have to see things for what they are. We have an offense that is performing well. But again, let's keep our emotions in check here, because we performed well against a very poor Detroit defense. But even with that, you know, even with that, to be able to put up 48 points in a football game, against any NFL team, you put up 48 points, you have an ability there. Offense played well. This defense, though, man, the defense is just not going to it's not going to allow us to do what we need to do. However, you know, I'm gonna keep coming with the good, and I'm gonna come back with the bad, you know, to keep things on a level here. But looking at the rest of the division, right, tonight. Monday, the 49ers took down the Rams in impressive fashion, I might add. And I don't like saying anything good about the San Francisco 49ers, but they put a hurting on Stafford and the Rams. And so now the whole division is knotted up again at 2-2. And, you know, if you would ask most people a month ago, you know, what are the chances? Not that Seahawks will have two wins, right? That the Seattle having two wins at this point isn't necessarily, surprising, but being knotted up at even in the division, all four teams at 2-2. Now that is surprising. Having, you know, not having it be glaringly obvious that this is not your year. By a month into the season, that's surprising. That's very surprising. You know, I'm not going to sit here and suggest that Seattle has a chance to win the division or go to the playoffs or win the Super Bowl or anything like that. I'm not going to say that. But what I am saying is that we have a quarterback who's performing at the top of the league, top of the quarter of all quarterbacks in the league, and we are tied basically for first place in the division. Now, there's some people who are going to take offense to that statement. And when we go to the comments, we'll talk about that. You got to be careful, boy. That these comments in these Facebook groups. Oh, you get these people who just want to, you know, sound like they know what they're talking about. They want everybody wants to know football. Everybody wants to, sound like they have some level of knowledge, you know, at a higher level than the next person. And it's laughable, but we'll get to that in a minute. So yeah, Seattle is 2-2, Rams 2-2, Niners 2-2, Cardinals 2-2. We're all even, you know, it's 0-0. And the next 2 weeks we have the underperforming New Orleans Saints, who may or may not have their quarterback. And then we have the Cardinals, who are also not necessarily playing that well. And then the third game is the The Los Angeles Chargers, which I might try to find a way to go to that game. The Chargers are a team who, for the most part, looks like they haven't really found themselves either. Is it unreasonable to see us going 2-1 over the next 3 weeks? I don't think so. I don't think it's unreasonable. The way the league right now looks very chaotic. We're seeing a lot of wins where we expect losses and a lot of losses where we expect wins. I think what we're finding is that all of us who thought we knew everything really, maybe we don't really know what to expect at this point. Because no one would have guessed that Miami would have been 3-0. Very unfortunate in their situation. With Tua, and oh gosh, real quick on that, Tua. Okay, I'm going to say this very plainly. I believe the Miami Dolphins are culpable for whatever situation Tua Tagovailoa is in. I don't believe for even a moment that after he took that hit against Buffalo, that he had a back and or ankle injury. The guy got pushed down, pushed backwards from in front, got pushed down. He fell back, slammed his head on the ground, got up wobbly. Now, I've fallen and I have, first of all, there was no talk about his ankle at that moment. And I have fallen backwards before and fallen on my collar, on my collarbone, my tailbone before. And it hurts. Falling on your tailbone hurts like you know what, but it didn't make my knees buckle when I tried to get up and walk. Tua had a concussion, which is why his knees buckled when he tried to walk. Now, and he should have been taken out of that game and kept out of that game. And then what happened the following week against the Bengals, he shouldn't have been in the game in the first place. Now, though, I will say this. Right, I will say this. I'll say as the one saving grace for the Miami Dolphins. Okay, because hey, look, the NFL is a business. Okay, the NFL is a business, and you can't have your marquee players in this business be on the sideline. Okay, imagine. Okay, you've got Dade County, Florida. Okay, you got Dade County, Florida, who is right now seeing that their team might be potentially the best team in football, certainly in the AFC, potentially. And you want to keep out their star quarterback because he bumped his head? Like, you can't do that. You can't do that. The money, there's no money in that decision, right? You gotta keep the court of public opinion is always right, even when it's dead wrong. There would be no way that Miami keeps Tua out of that game if he passed protocol. And that's what I was going, and that's what I'm you know, segueing into. The one saving grace for the Miami Dolphins is this: if Tua truly passed protocol, then you can't blame anybody except for the NFL. That's it. You can't blame anyone except for the NFL for Tua's situation. He shouldn't have been in the game because his brain was bruised. But the criteria you have to meet to get back in the game, one must assume at this point that he passed it, that he met the criteria. And if you meet the criteria, you go back in the game. You can go back in the game. Now, ethically, is there a question to be asked? Possibly, probably. You know, personally, I think that, you know, this outside doctor that you're supposed to have, you know, give me a break. It's my opinion that you throw money at these guys to get them to give you the answer that you're looking for. Right. It's a business it's always a business. There's always a fix. There's always gamesmanship. Everybody's always looking for the competitive edge, that upper hand. You know, so I mean, what good does it do this doctor to give the Miami Dolphins, organization news that they don't want to hear? Right now, maybe I'm being, a conspiracy theorist. But the dude, obviously, when have you ever seen a guy bump his head and then collapse as he tried to walk right afterwards and him not have a concussion? You know, so I don't know. They're at fault for this. They're at fault. And if they're not at fault, the NFL and the NFLPA is at fault. I mean, whoever, you know, they're going to have to revisit the concussion protocol. Like they have to. They simply have to revisit what has to be met. Or what level it has to be met at, because you can't have that. If Tua Tagovailoa goes psycho in 15 years and kills somebody and drives his car over a cliff or something, it'll be because of these last 2 weeks in the NFL. And it'll be the NFL's fault. So, yeah, crazy. So I digressed and forgot where I was going, but yeah, we have three games coming up. Chaos in the league is where I was. Thank you. Chaos in the league. You know, who would have thought Miami would have been in the position they were in? Who would have thought that the Raiders would be winless until this weekend? The Philadelphia Eagles, although they, were slated to be good. Did we really think that they would be undefeated a month in? I don't know about all that. What about Dallas? You know, Dallas, you know, we love to make fun of the Dallas Cowboys, but when Dak Prescott went out, we thought they were done. But, you know, Cooper Rush comes in there and is looking like, well, I'm not going to say looking like he should have the job, but he's out there playing good football, out there playing very good football. So, chaos in the league so far. And I don't think it's too out of this world to consider that Seattle could go 2-1 over the next 3 weeks, and really still be in the mix. Really still be in the mix. 4-2. You know, 4-2 going into the seventh game of the season. I mean, that talk about exceeding expectations. So, you know, again, I'm not going to say that the Seahawks have a chance of doing anything. I'll save that for later. But it is surprising in the positive. And let's see what happens. Let's go to the comments. Seattle Seahawks group, Facebook. It's amazing to me the craziness that people spew. I got into it with people today about, you know, whether or not it was a good idea for the Seahawks, for the 49ers to win. So a couple weeks ago, it was about the Niners playing the Broncos. And, people were saying, oh, let's, root for the Broncos, root for the Niners. But the reason was because the true reason root for the Niners against Denver was because, Russell Wilson. But people will say, oh, no, the worse the Broncos do, the better the draft picks we got from them will be. I'm like, dude, so what? Right? First of all, Denver is going to win more games this year than is really ultimately going to matter when it comes to those picks. Right? Denver's not going to be last in their division. Denver's not going to have a 4-win season. Right? Those picks are going to be middling at best. So, like, forget about that. Right? Now, I'm of the opinion you never go for the 49ers. You never root for a division rival. Unless, of course, you have no choice, unless, of course, them winning somehow helps your team. So I said something in the group about, hey, you guys want a real good reason to actually root for the Niners, root for them tonight against the Rams because, you know, we'll all that'll lock up the division at 2-2. Which makes sense, I thought. But no. No. Eric Hull from the Seahawk group, you know, he not only did he respond in my original post, he made his own post today. You know, for those obviously talking about me, that said, if the 49ers win, we are in a four-way tie. Wrong in all capital letters. So not only am I wrong, right? Not only are we wrong for saying that, we're capital wrong. The division wins actually mean something and is the tiebreaker. So Eric Hull is obviously the football guru of the whatever domain he lives in. So if the 49ers win, they are in first place in the division. Just clarifying for some of you. Well, thank you for the clarification, Eric Hull. You know, I make the mistake far too often on the internet of assuming that things that go without saying can actually go unsaid. But that's a fool's errand on my part. Fool's errand. You know, just because you guys know a little extra detail about football outside of what the word touchdown means doesn't mean that you understand the game from the competitive perspective, right? Like, what in the devil does a tiebreaker really matter 4 weeks into the season? Like, tell me that. Of course, tiebreakers matter at some point. Of course, yes. Yeah, at any given time, no matter what, if two teams have the same record, technically, one of them is above the other at some point because the tiebreakers are always in play. But what does that matter? What does that matter on the 4th of October? It matters nothing. You got 13 football games left to play. What does a tiebreaker matter? Right? A tiebreaker is the equivalent of a half a game. Right? So what does that matter when there's 13 games left to play? You've got, I mean, even outside of the division, you've got a head-to-head, you've got a division record, you've got common opponents, you've got conference record, you've got points scored. There's like 12 scenarios in tiebreak order. And that's just if it's between two teams. There's even more if it's between three or more teams, or it's rearranged somehow. It doesn't matter in week four about tiebreakers. I tried to make the point to these people that, hey, 4 weeks, a month into the season, a quarter of the way through the season, we're not dead already, which is what a lot of people thought. A quarter of the way into the season, we are right there, even with everybody else. But some people have to make their some people have to get in there and be right. People have to be right. I guess I'm one of them. So, you know, I guess here I am calling the kettle black in a way. But dude, come on, like. Oh man. I made a comment about DK Metcalf getting carted off the field on Sunday. And there's another one. People want to try and have a gotcha moment. Why do you guys have to have a gotcha moment all the time? Is it really necessary? We're all Seahawk fans, guys. Like, I call people out when they say stupid things, right? I call people out when they say dumb stuff. I simply commented in the group, DK carted off, !! With a sad face, right? Because that's concerning. Is it not? I mean, you know, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's, you know, a bit concerning if your star player gets carted off the field at any time. That's a concern. Well, David Hathaway, who I've had some goings on with over the last few weeks, tells me this is why knee-jerk posts are rarely a good idea. A knee-jerk post, like a knee-jerk reaction to the situation. Well, I don't know if I really call that a knee-jerk reaction. I didn't say that DK Metcalf is out for the game. I didn't say DK Metcalf carted off and, his bones look to be sticking out through his skin. I didn't say that DK Metcalf was carted off and he was holding his head in his hand. All I said was DK Metcalf carted off. That's a concern. Everybody watching that game learned at exactly the same time that DK Metcalf was carted off because he was pinching one in and needed the assist. There was something knocking on the door and he didn't think he was going to be able to keep it from busting out if he had to walk, walk to the bathroom. So he got a ride. And everybody found out at the same time. But oh, did they try to get me in the comments? Yeah, it was just laughable that I jumped to the conclusion that he was dying. DK Metcalf was dead. He's carted off the field and he's dead. That was some people's gotcha moment. Lori Harville was another one about the tiebreaker. Lori Harville was just absolutely sure. No. Niners own the tiebreaker, so go for the Rams again. And let's be fair, everybody. Like, who cares who you root for? Since when does rooting while you're sitting on your couch had anything to do with the outcome of a game, right? But we're just talking like fans. You know, when I said, "Hey, good idea to root," this is the time to root for the Niners. You know, if you want to have a good reason, not because they're playing against Russell Wilson or because you think that Denver is going to give us better draft picks. If they lose, which they're not, Denver's not going to lose ultimately this year as far with relation to the draft picks that we got from them. That's not a good reason to root for the Niners. A good reason to root for the Niners is for them to help us draw even with the rest of the division. That's a good reason. But no, Lori Harville. Nope, Niners own tiebreaker. So Rams it is. Again, I said, Lori, a tiebreaker has little value 4 games into a 17-game season. Well, Lori tells me, I obviously don't have any knowledge of football. Bless your heart, Lori. Lori Harville. It's a very simple question. Would you rather be a game ahead of a team that has a tiebreaker, or would you rather have a tiebreaker and be a game behind? Like, it's really that simple. And not that we would have been, again, it's just if you could answer that question, then the other question should be very obvious. Would you rather be ahead or behind? It makes no difference if the team has a tiebreaker over you if you have a better record than them. Larry Harville says, well, if the Niners lose, they are a game behind us. So I'm picking the Rams. but yeah, then the Rams will be a game ahead of us, Larry. No value. Apparently no value. I don't know anything about football, but Larry sees no value in our records being tied. Oh, and then Scotty B. Evans got on there and gave Lori a piece of his mind in my defense. So big up to Scotty B. Evans from the Seattle Seahawks group. He went up there and dropped the mic on her. Some guy named Clint 10. I think he might be a troll. Because he went in there talking the craziest stuff. He said that somebody made a post about, or maybe he made the post about Geno Smith. Clint 10 Clinton, I'm guessing that's what it's supposed to be, says, he thinks that not only is Geno Smith going to be in the running for MVP this year, but he believes that we potentially might get multiple first round picks for him and cash from some team for us to take into the offseason. I swear, I think he was trolling me on this one. I'm like, Clinton, do you recognize that cash for players is not a thing? You can't throw in a few extra bucks along along with some picks to get a player. It doesn't work like that in the NFL, sir. That's not how it works. And no chance in a million years would any team give up a first round pick for Geno Smith. I don't care if Geno Smith throws for a zillion yards this year. No team is going to give up a first round, not even one, let alone multiple first round picks for Geno Smith. Are you nuts? Are you completely nuts? That's one of those ones that I think is just so crazy. That's just gotta be a troll. That can't be real. I can't see that one being a real one. People are loving to show the comparison over Geno and Russ, or between Geno and Russ. Let's do this, guys. Let's not do that. Let's not compare Geno and Russ right now, four games into the season, as if we won that trade because of that. Now, we might have won the trade because of all the other aspects of it, right? But only a fool would suggest that Russell Wilson is somehow, not a good quarterback, right? Because of the difficulties having in Denver, the difficulties he's having in Denver. Only a fool would suggest that, right? And only a fool would suggest that Geno Smith is somehow better than Russell Wilson, or better than we all know Geno Smith to be, because he's having some success four games into the year. You'd be a fool to suggest those things. If anything, that situation, that relation with stats related to those two players, if anything, that proves that football is very much a system. You know, the game is based on system as much as, or even, you know, maybe not as much as, but you know, maybe as much as it's based on the player, right? Because Russell Wilson was nothing but successful in Seattle. He's had higher success levels and lower success levels, but he's been nothing but successful as an NFL quarterback in Seahawk uniform. The record books say so. He goes to Denver, he looks like crap. Conversely, Geno Smith has never looked good anywhere. But here he is right now, four games into 2022, and he's the best quarterback in the NFL right now, statistically. So it goes to show you that it has, as much as it is the player, system makes a big deal. System makes a big deal. In this system, Geno is succeeding tremendously so far. Well, folks, it was an interesting weekend again. The game in Detroit really gave us just as much to be upset about as it did to be happy about. Let us not get too high on this, because at the end of the day, we still gave up 45 points to the Lions, despite the fact that we scored 48 points against the Lions. We're going up against the Saints team next week, again on the road. Now, they are coming back from overseas, which might give us a bit of a competitive edge, but obviously we're not going to rest on that. But hey, Imagine us winning this game next week and us being above 500 five games in. Anybody expecting that? Then I see nothing but posts about Seattle's only going to win four games this year. Seattle might only win two games this year. All of the naysayers, right? That, you know, I believe that we are all real fans. But there's levels to this, right? There's some people in here who don't know diddly squat about football. There's some people in here who know, you know, just enough. And there's some people in here who actually really know football down to the X's and O's. You know, but when you're talking, when you're on the internet, you know, everybody knows everything and everybody's right. And keep the comments coming in the group, because in the groups, because I love this. I love the back and forth in the groups, and I will be sure to make sure that you know, I give everybody their credit for their silliness in these groups. Oh, if you guys get the chance, make sure you check out Seattle Sports Union on the web, seattlesportsunion.com, at Seattle Sports U on Twitter, Seattle Sports Union or the SSU podcast on Spotify. Or again, you can find links in the previously mentioned locations. This past Thursday, we had the chance to interview the voice of the Seahawks himself, former Seahawk wide receiver Steve Rabel. We had a great interview with him. Very nice guy. He's just a consummate professional. Wonderful dude. So check us out on the SSU podcast for that interview. Myself, Abraham DeWeese, Brian the Soul Man Solak, Matthew Page, and the rest of the team. For our unlicensed professional opinion, everything Seattle sports, from the Mariners to the Mist, and of course our Seattle Seahawks. So check that out. This is Robert English, your SoCal Seahawk. I'm going to sign off. Go Hawks.